From the heart of our nation's capital in Washington, D.C., bringing compelling interviews, insightful analysis, taking you beyond the headlines and sound bites into conversations with our nation's leaders and newsmakers, all from a biblical worldview. Sitting in for Tony is today's host, Jody Heiss.
Well, good afternoon and welcome to this Tuesday edition of Washington Watch. I'm your host, Jody Heiss. I'm the Senior Vice President here at the Family Research Council and President of FRC Action. An honor to have you with us today. Coming up today on Washington Watch, Vice President Kamala Harris announced today on social media that she's selected Minnesota Governor Tim Walz as her running mate. Of course, this finalizes the matchup between the 2024 presidential election. So the question is, who is Tim Walz? What is his background? What does he stand for? Well, this is what former House Speaker Nancy Pelosi had to say about Governor Walz.
He's not on the left. He was right down the middle. Right down the middle in his values and leverage in the debate in the Congress. So he'll be a great, he and Kamala know that we have to govern from the center, and that's where we are.
Right down the middle. Yeah, that's what they used to say about my golf swing with the golf ball. Right down the middle. Right. Well, we'll get a more accurate assessment from Moses Bratrud, who's the Director of Strategy at the Minnesota Family Council, here in just a few moments. Meanwhile, throughout the Middle East, tensions remained high today as Israel prepares for what appears to be an imminent attack from Iran.
It's now beyond a shadow of a doubt that the Iranian axis of evil has formed a stranglehold against Israel. A ring of armed terror armies, Hezbollah in Lebanon, Hamas in Gaza, the Houthis in Yemen, and other militias. But it is equally clear that Israel will exact a heavy price for aggressions against it from any arena.
A very tense situation developing for sure. That was Israeli government spokesman David Mincer earlier today. And we'll get an update from Congressman Randy Weber on that situation here momentarily. And on Washington Watch in the past, we've discussed debanking. This is the discriminatory practice that some financial institutions have used to target conservative and religious organizations. Well, earlier this year, the Biden administration spoke out against state laws that are designed to ban debanking. And some red state attorneys generals have fired back. I'll get an update from Alliance Defending Freedom attorney Ryan Bankert a little later in the program. And a scathing report from the House Judiciary Committee confirms that the Biden administration has released some 99 illegal migrants who were on the terror watch list. California Congressman Tom McClintock, who is a member of the House Judiciary Committee, will share the details. And Jessica Vaughn, a little bit later, the Director of Policy Studies at the Center for Immigration Studies, will go with me deeper into the policies that led to the findings in this report, as well as discuss what can be done with all of this information. So we have a packed program coming your way. You don't want to miss any of it. But if by chance you do, you can always go back and catch it at our website, tonyperkins.com. And of course, there are likewise tons and tons of information and resources available there for you as well. And don't forget, we have a team at iVoter Guide that's hard at work trying to finalize the iVoter Guide for you. It will cover national, state, and in many cases, some local elections for you to compare notes between candidates and various issues. If you'd like to receive updates as the guides are finalized, you can do so by simply texting the word guide, G-U-I-D-E, text the word guide to 67742. All right, now for our first story today, Vice President Kamala Harris formally announced that she has selected Minnesota Governor Tim Walz as her vice presidential running mate. The 60-year-old former high school teacher who governed Minnesota during the 2020 riots, many of you will remember that, he joined the short list of possible VP candidates last week following a series of cable news appearances where he attacked President Trump. And Vice President Kamala Harris was expected, quite frankly, by many of us to select a more moderate blue state governor to try to balance some of her own personal far-left agenda. But according to those who live in Minnesota, according to those who know him best, Governor Walz is far from being a moderate. Joining me now to discuss this is Moses Bratrud. He's the Director of Strategy at the Minnesota Family Council. Moses, welcome to Washington Watch. It's an honor to have you.
Good to be with you.
Okay, so since she herself is so far to the left, Kamala Harris was widely expected to pick a moderate governor as her running mate. You, of course, live in Minnesota, and you say that Governor Walz certainly is no moderate. Tell us why you say that.
That's right. And I did not think I would have to be on a program like this, because as you mentioned, when this process started and it looked like Kamala Harris was going to step in to replace Joe Biden, nobody was talking about Minnesota Governor Tim Walz. And as you said, that changed over the course of a few weeks. The Harris campaign started to see him as a reliable attack dog, who they could trot out on cable media to attack J.D. Vance, to attack Donald Trump and other Republicans. And it is confusing. It's almost like there are two Tim Walzes. Tim Walz is from a rural area. He was a history teacher in a mid-sized city. He served in Congress in one of Minnesota's most rural districts. While he was there, he had a reputation for moderation. He focused on veterans issues, kept his head down to some extent, didn't really make a huge splash. But when he came back to Minnesota and ran for governor in 2018, there was some politics going on within the Democratic Party in Minnesota. There was there's distinct factions within the Democratic Party, which other states have. But here we have, for example, Ilhan Omar on one hand and Amy Klobuchar on the other hand, to name two politicians with national profile. And Tim Walz definitely feels like more of an Amy Klobuchar type person, doesn't he? He seems like a kind of a straight shooter, straight talker type of guy who could have a conversation with Trump voters. And that's certainly what Kamala Harris hopes she will get from him. However, once he became governor, there was a distinct left turn. And we saw this in the 2020 riots when, you know, I'm in my home in St. Paul, smelling the smoke, seeing the boarded up windows, wondering why is the governor not calling out the National Guard? Why? What's the delay here? And in fact, during that riding, he waited 3 days while the city burned to send out the National Guard. But then, you know, we became even more concerned after Tim Walz won re-election in 2022. After that time, we saw a huge twist to the left. We saw three deeply concerning bills that he signed in one day with regards to gender and abortion that I'll give you some details on. The kidnapping bill, and I see you have footage of it there. The kidnapping bill places children in emergency state custody if their parents refuse to provide them with harmful, experimental, gender-affirming health care. This is so-called treatments that the rest of the world is moving away from. Tim Walz is doubling down. He also banned so-called conversion therapy, and that threatens mental health practitioners who offer voluntary, compassionate care to young people who just want to live according to their faith in the area of gender and sexuality. Finally, just, and this is all in one day, in 2023, he signed a bill that would make Minnesota a safe haven for abortion doctors who face criminal charges in other states. So each of these bills puts kids in our state at risk, and it's just so hard to imagine how you can claim to be moderate once this record becomes widely known. And in fact, just last week, Governor Walz tweeted this. He said on July 26th, "Here in Minnesota, we believe in protecting personal freedoms." Sounds great, but here's what comes next. "It's why we established reproductive freedom and gender-affirming care as fundamental rights in Minnesota, and it's why we banned the practice of conversion therapy and ended book bans based on ideology. So there's such a pivot there from that first sentence about personal freedoms moving to a far left agenda, abortion, gender ideology, and potentially even the state taking kids away from their families. So that's the Tim Walz that we're worried about. You know, there's going to be the slick media consultants that come in and help him appear moderate on the campaign trail so that he can help Kamala Harris win states like Michigan and Wisconsin. But we know who the real Tim Walz is here in Minnesota. And unfortunately, we don't think it would be a blessing for the rest of the country if he were elected vice president.
Yeah, absolutely. Even the New York Times came out. I mean, all over the place. You look at the news today, a lot of liberal news outlets are sounding an alarm. Like, why in the world did she pick someone as radical to the left as she is herself? And you bring up some frightening things. I mean, certainly this is a restriction of freedom, not a protection of freedom, the things that he has stood for, and a weaponized government going after people who disagree with his personal agenda. But Governor Walz, as I understand, has also not been too far removed from scandal. Can you tell us about some of those issues that are now on his plate?
The largest COVID relief fund fraud was right here in Minnesota. It's called the Feeding Our Future scandal. And if your viewers want to have their hair blown back, you can look up that scandal. It was a nonprofit during the COVID era. They were claiming to provide meals to kids who were out of school due to the pandemic. And the conspirators defrauded the federal government to the tune of $250 million. That's billion with a B, $250 million. And this is all under Governor Walz's watch. The state government is dispersing these federal dollars to eligible programs. And this happened under his watch. He can't pass the buck on that. There's also this idea that he's the most transparent governor and that he wants to govern for one Minnesota. But actually, what's happening, and journalists on the left, right, and center are complaining about this, he's governing by text message and then deleting those text messages. So there's a whole host of decisions that we don't know how they're being made, requests through the Freedom of Information Act that it just turns out that the governor is deleting those texts, kind of like a Hillary Clinton documents type situation. So the fact is, you know, certainly there are more scandal plagued politicians in the country, but Governor Walz has not kept his hands clean. And it's sad to say that. I want to be able to respect, you know, my governing our governing officials here in Minnesota, but Governor Walz unfortunately has misplaced that trust.
Wow, it's very alarming. And of course, I don't know of much that he has said as it relates to Israel, but of course, Minnesota does have a pretty sizable Somali Muslim presence there, so I can only imagine where he may land on those issues as well. Moses Bratcherud, I wish we had more time to talk with you about some of these things, but we deeply appreciate you coming on and giving us the picture of your governor in the state of Minnesota, Tim Walz, who is now the vice presidential nominee, the pick from Kamala Harris as her running mate. Moses, thank you for joining us. We appreciate it so much.
It's my pleasure. Thank you.
All right, friends, coming up after the break, Congressman Randy Weber will be joining me as we continue to monitor the tension in the Middle East. So stay tuned. Much more coming your way right here on Washington Watch.
The news reflects the world we live in, but it also shapes it. Like it or not, what we learn about the world on a daily basis impacts our thinking, our worldview, and ultimately our action. So much of today's media is built on a shaky foundation that can send us hurling toward harmful ideas and hopeless solutions. Family Research Council created the Washington Stand to be a news outlet that speaks from a firm foundation, bringing you news, commentary, and analysis of what's happening in America and around the world. The Washington Stand is unapologetically biblical and uncompromisingly committed to truth. Equip yourself for the world we live in with a biblical worldview found daily at the Washington Stand. Find us at WashingtonStand.com. That's WashingtonStand.com.
Research has found that there are 59 million American adults who are a lot like you. There are millions of people around the country who are born again, deeply committed to practicing their faith, and believe the Bible is the reliable Word of God. But that's not all. They're also engaged in our government. They're voters. They're more likely to be involved in their community, and they're making a difference in elections. The problem is that a lot of them feel alone, too. We want to change that. FRC wants to connect these 59 million Americans to speak the truth together, no matter the cost. If you want to learn more about this group and what it means to be a spiritually active, governance-engaged conservative, or if you want to find out if you are one of these sage cons yourself, join us. Go to frc.org/sagecon, sagecon, to learn more. That's sagecon, sagecon, to learn more.
Hi, I'm Georgina, an intern here at Family Research Council, and I wanted to take a moment to tell you about FRC's incredible internship program. This three-month program is both a discipleship and a development opportunity where you get to take part in truly meaningful work and help advance faith, family, and freedom in public policy and our culture. This program features hands-on professional experience here in Washington, D.C., weekly biblical worldview training, tours around the district, opportunities to meet some of the country's most prominent policy experts, and more. The program also includes free housing, a meal stipend, and is available in spring, summer, and fall. If you're a young adult passionate about seeing biblical values championed in our country, as a current intern, I cannot recommend this program enough. For more information or to apply, please go to frc.org/internships. Again, that's frc.org/internships. Apply today.
Welcome back to Washington Watch. I'm your host, Jody Heiss, filling in for Tony, and glad to have you with us today as well. All right, as you are keenly aware, I'm sure Israel and Hezbollah exchanged fire throughout today with dueling airstrikes, as the region there is bracing for a possible direct attack on Israel from Iran. It's all in retaliation for the killing of Hamas and Hezbollah leaders last week. In fact, last night, a rocket attacked on a U.S. airbase in western Iraq wounded several American troops, and the U.S. Defense Department blamed the attack on Iranian proxies, calling it a, quote, dangerous escalation, end quote. Well, joining me now to discuss this and more is Congressman Randy Weber. He serves on several committees, including the Energy and Commerce Committee, but he is also the co-chair of the House Bipartisan Task Force for Combating Anti-Semitism. He represents the 14th Congressional District of Texas. Congressman Weber, welcome back to Washington Watch. Great to see you, my friend.
Thank you, Jody. Good to be with you as always.
Well, listen, you know, all of us right now are, with every passing day, watching the situation in Israel as they are bracing for what appears to be an imminent attack from Iran. What's the latest that you know? What can you tell us?
Well, here's the thing. We've watched this for a long time, as you well know, and I appreciate you noticing that we are all part of that caucus, anti-Semitism caucus. So we've been watching this with a great degree of interest. I'm going to go back a little bit, Jody, to the killing of Soleimani. If you remember when Trump was in office, and Lord, don't we need him back, they found out Soleimani, who was one of the main terrorist killers, plotters in IRGC, was on vacation. They took him out with a missile strike. And I'll tell you a fun story about that, Jody. We were having dinner with Lindsey Graham, Senator Graham, six or seven of us members of the House, a couple months back. He told about playing golf with Trump, and Trump said, "I'm thinking about killing Soleimani, Lindsey. What do you think?" Lindsey said, "Sure." So 4 hours later, Soleimani was dead, you know, give or take. And so then Mark Thiessen was on Fox News several months ago, Jody, and said that I hadn't heard this, that the Trump administration had sent a message back to back channels to Iran saying that if y'all retaliate over this, the next missile strike you see will be in Tehran. So I think if we had Trump in office, we'd be in a lot better shape. I'm glad to see that the administration is sending more firepower over there to the Middle East. We only hope that they're serious and that they mean it, that we can literally have Israel's back so that if and when that attack does occur, we are there to help protect them.
Yeah, and it's not just the attacks on Israel and what appears to be an imminent threat there, but as I mentioned a while ago, just last night, there was an attack on a U.S. air base that wounded several American troops. And here, let me just play, if you would get clip number two ready for me. I want to play this for you, Congressman Weber. This is Karine Jean-Pierre and what she said about that attack earlier.
The United States condemns the attack on the al-Assad base yesterday. Our hearts go out to the service members who were injured, and we are hoping for a speedy recovery. We will respond to any attack against our personnel in a manner and place of our choosing.
All right, so what are your reaction to this? I mean, they're saying we're going to respond to this. Is that blowing smoke, or what do you think?
Well, there was about 100 times that they had attacked some of our bases somewhere before the Biden administration finally did something. I think what we should do is anytime there's one of those missile strikes or attacks, we ought to obliterate the ground. Choose a number in a 5-mile radius wherever it came from, or 10-mile radius. If we've got satellite vision, if we've got vision up there, we ought to follow these assailants, these terrorists, these murderers, and we ought to literally wipe them off the face of the earth. Every single time, not just, oh, you know, we'll get there if it happens again. It's that bit of time of our choosing, a place of our choosing. We ought to send the signal loud and clear immediately, if not sooner.
Well, and that's what we have all heard over and over and over. And it is a reality that part of the world only understands strength. And when they sense weakness, they're all over it. And much of what's happening right now, literally around the world for that matter, but particularly right here in the Middle East, as we're discussing now, is because of weakness from our current administration. And they just don't believe there's going to be any consequences for them doing whatever they want to do. Is that kind of an accurate picture from your perspective?
Well, it is, Jody, and I would add this to it. You're right on track, and I would add this to it. It's not just administration. The Democrats are fueling this fire.
Good
I mean,
point.
It's unbelievable. When Benjamin Netanyahu came to address the joint meeting of Congress, it depends on what numbers you want to use. Some estimates as high as over 100 and something congressional Democrats boycotted that meeting. As you know, the vice president was not even at that meeting. She had something more important to do. So what they're doing is they're sending a signal to the rest of the world and to Israel, by the way, that they no longer feel it's important to be part of Israel's defense and be a good ally and a good partner with Israel. And to me, Jody, that's scary.
Yeah, absolutely. And unfortunately, we've got less than 2 minutes here. But I mentioned this yesterday, but a recent report has revealed that the U.S. supposedly mistakenly has given some $239 million of taxpayer money to the Taliban. And all this has happened since the Bosch withdrawal from Afghanistan. Your reaction to that? I mean, we're funding the bad guys.
Well, and not only that, but you recall we left them, it depends on what estimates you want to use, somewhere near $80 billion with a B dollars of equipment, of weapons, of vehicles, of all kinds of things that the Taliban can use. And you're right, the only thing they understand is force. I'm proud of Israel for taking out Hezbollah leaders. I don't care. I'm glad they're doing it in Tehran, quite frankly. I'm glad that they're doing it all over. I'm just want them to keep taking them out. I want the United States to keep backing them. And you know this, Jody, as a devout Christian, as an evangelical Christian, the Bible says, God says he will bless whoever blesses Israel, and whoever curses Israel, he will curse. Jody, I know which side of that equation we need to be on.
Absolutely. Thank you so much, Congressman Randy Weber from Texas. Always an honor to have you on the program, and always good to see you, my friend. Thank you.
Thanks for what y'all do, Jody.
Thank you. All right, after the break, we're going to be looking at an effort to fight back against the debanking tactics that some financial institutions have used to target religious and conservative groups. Seems like something that ought to be a no-brainer, but there's much, much more to this story. than what you may realize. We're going to be joined by an ADF attorney to bring us up to speed. So stay tuned. We'll be back in just a moment.
America was a bright light until the culture gave into darkness. But we won't. We're in a battle for the soul of our nation, between right and wrong, between truth and lies. At a time when the mainstream media is blocking Americans from truth, millions are searching for a source of trustworthy news that shines a light in the darkness. At this time of great need, FRC is lighting the way forward. For 40 years, Family Research Council and its partners have stood together to advance and defend biblical truth in government and culture. Between our flagship broadcast program, Washington Watch, with Tony Perkins, to our news outlet, The Washington Stand, FRC is providing believers across the country with news they can trust from a biblical worldview. When you stand with FRC, you help light the way forward for America and the next generation. Go to frc.org/give.
If you're a young adult passionate about seeing biblical values championed in our country, check out Family Research Council's internship program. This three-month program is both a discipleship and development opportunity where you get to take part in truly meaningful work and help advance faith, family, and freedom in public policy and our culture. Featuring hands-on experience, biblical worldview training, free housing, and more, this internship is a great opportunity for spiritual and professional development. Check out frc.org/internships to apply today.
As a congressman, Jody Heiss witnessed firsthand how the gradual erosion of congressional integrity has crippled America's faith in its most essential institutions. His newly released book, Sacred Trust, Election Integrity, and the Will of the People, sounds the alarm on the attempts of career bureaucrats to subvert our elections and provide solutions to make every vote count. Help preserve election integrity and order Sacred Trust today wherever books are sold.
Hope you're having a great day. Welcome back to Washington Watch. I'm your host, Jody Heiss. All right, there's a coalition of some 20 red state attorneys generals that have accused the Treasury Department of mischaracterizing state laws that are designed to prevent financial institutions from discrimination in banking, calling these laws a threat to national security. According to these AGs, the Treasury Department is pursuing political ends rather than fulfilling its responsibility to consumers by opposing state laws to prevent what's known as debanking. You've probably heard of that terminology by now, but joining me now to discuss this is Ryan Bankert. He's the Senior Vice President for Strategic Initiatives and Special Counsel to the President at Alliance Defending Freedom. Ryan, welcome to the program. Glad to have you joining us.
Jody, thank you so much. It's great to be here.
All right, so we have talked a good bit in the past here on Washington Watch about debanking. But walk us through what is typically involved in this. What does this really look like?
You know, Jody, a great example is our client in Tennessee, Indigenous Advanced Ministries, a ministry that serves orphans and widows in the nation of Uganda in Africa. And the proprietor of that organization learned as he was about to depart for a trip to Africa to serve these needy people that his Bank of America account had been suspended. He was no longer able to access any of his funds to serve the needs of his constituents. He was never given a reason why. It was done really overnight for no apparent reason at all. And he lost access to his funds at a critical moment when he desperately needed them. And so frequently these debanking instances look just like that. They're done with no apparent reason, and they're done to groups like missions organizations or Sam Brownback's organization, National Committee for Religious Freedom.
Yeah, it's stunning when you look at all this. And quite frankly, Ryan, you know, it may be news. It may be brand new information to many of our viewers and listeners right now that officials from the Treasury Department are opposing state efforts to stop this. So what happened? Why is the Treasury Department on the wrong side of this issue?
You know, it's really stunning that the Treasury Department would argue that simply preventing discrimination by banks on the basis of religion or political viewpoint somehow constitutes a threat to national security. Laws like the ones that were passed in Florida just this past term or in Tennessee do just that. They simply prevent banks from withdrawing services for reasons that aren't quantifiable, that don't relate to objective risks, or that relate to someone's religious or political viewpoints. And the Treasury Department sent a letter just last month in July saying that somehow these state laws threaten national security by preventing banks from taking into account such things as a customer's terrorist affiliation. Now, I guarantee you, you can read these laws, and nowhere in the laws is there a prohibition or a bar on banks taking into consideration the terrorist affiliation of a customer. That's simply not what they do.
Well, you know, it's maddening, it's frustrating. What you're really saying is what's going on here is that people are being punished. People are being denied some basic financial services based upon their religious beliefs and or their political beliefs, not because they're terrorists, for crying out loud, but because of what they believe. Is that kind of a summary of what's going on here?
You know, Jody, a lot of this relates back to the absorption of something called ESG, and I'm sure your viewers have heard that acronym several times, Environmental, Social, and Governance Standards. And these are simply standards that a number of businesses, including banks, have adopted over the past few years to guide their conduct. And what was found back during the Trump administration, right before the election, was that a number of banks had been denying services to companies because they manufactured guns, because they were involved in the fossil fuel industry, and increasingly we're finding banks denying services to individuals or organizations because of their religious affiliation. And this is very much in keeping with the push for ESG standards. This is a politicization of the banking industry, just like we've seen the politicization of a number of different sectors of the economy. It has nothing to do with risk. It has nothing to do with the actual conduct of the business of banking, and everything to do with driving a political agenda that is opposed to things like I said, fossil fuels, gun manufacturing, gun ownership, or increasingly religious belief.
Yeah, it's their attempt to try to force social policies on those. And you say the politicizing all of this, but it's really weaponizing the government and the banking industry to come after an individual. What is the Treasury Department afraid of with these groups?
Now, I think the Treasury Department here is likely reacting to political pressure to keep advancing this ESG agenda. And we've seen it over and over again throughout the economy. In fact, if you look at the report that was issued by the House Subcommittee on the Weaponization of Government just this past spring, the report detailed a number of instances by the Treasury Department and various sub-agencies within the department to surveil Americans simply because they did such innocent things like shopping at sporting goods stores for hunting rifles. And so it's really incredible the amount of surveillance that's happening right now of ordinary Americans who are simply going about their business. They're being surveilled by these financial institutions. And the concern that we have, quite frankly, is that the left is going to try to use some of these businesses to, like you said, drive policy, drive social policy, much like we see the Chinese Communist Party doing in China with social credit scores. Now, obviously, that's a leap from where we are today, but we certainly don't want to see things head in that direction.
Absolutely. Ryan Bankard from Alliance Defending Freedom, thank you so much for breaking this down for us. We greatly appreciate it. All right, friends, after the break, we're going to discuss a new report from the House Judiciary Committee about illegal terrorists in our country. Stay tuned. It's all coming your way.
The news reflects the world we live in, but it also shapes it. Like it or not, what we learn about the world on a daily basis impacts our thinking, our worldview, and ultimately our action. So much of today's media is built on a shaky foundation that can send us hurling toward harmful ideas and hopeless solutions. Family Research Council created the Washington Stand to be a news outlet that speaks from a firm foundation, bringing you news, commentary, and analysis of what's happening in America and around the world. The Washington Stand is unapologetically biblical and uncompromisingly committed to truth. Equip yourself for the world we live in with a biblical worldview found daily at the Washington Stand. Find us at WashingtonStand.com. That's WashingtonStand.com.
America was a bright light until the culture gave into darkness. But we won't. We're in a battle for the soul of our nation, between right and wrong, between truth and lies. At a time when the mainstream media is blocking Americans from truth, millions are searching for a source of trustworthy news that shines a light in the darkness. At this time of great need, FRC is lighting the way forward. For 40 years, Family Research Council and its partners have stood together to advance and defend biblical truth in government and culture. Between our flagship broadcast program, Washington Watch, with Tony Perkins, to our news outlet, The Washington Stand, FRC is providing believers across the country with news they can trust from a biblical worldview. When you stand with FRC, you help light the way forward for America and the next generation. Go to frc.org/give.
If you're a young adult passionate about seeing biblical values championed in our country, check out Family Research Council's internship program. This three-month program is both a discipleship and development opportunity where you get to take part in truly meaningful work and help advance faith, family, and freedom in public policy and our culture. Featuring hands-on experience, biblical worldview training, free housing, and more, this internship is a great opportunity for spiritual and professional development. Check out frc.org/internships to apply today.
As a congressman, Jody Heiss witnessed firsthand how the gradual erosion of congressional integrity has crippled America's faith in its most essential institutions. His newly released book, Sacred Trust, Election Integrity, and the Will of the People, sounds the alarm on the attempts of career bureaucrats to subvert our elections and provide solutions to make every vote count. Help preserve election integrity and order Sacred Trust today wherever books are sold.
Good afternoon. Welcome back to Washington Watch. I'm your host, Jody Heiss, sitting in today for Tony. Glad to have you on board with us. Two real quick reminders before we get to our next guest. Look, we need to urge President Biden and the presidential candidates to stop holding up aid to Israel. These are unbelievably critical days for Israel. The threat is real, and Israel should be a priority of any current chief executive, as well as any candidate for the White House. Now's the time for them to be loud and clear about where do they stand on their support for Israel. We have a petition asking both President Biden and the presidential candidates to be firm on their stance for Israel. We would like for you to sign those petitions, as we'll be delivering them in pretty short order, both to the president and all of the presidential candidates. To sign the petition, you can go to one of two different places. First, frcaction.org/support, or you can simply text the word support to 67742. Then, here's announcement number two. If you or if someone you know is wondering, why should we pray for, why should we stand for Israel? Well, Tony has a brand new resource out. It's entitled, Why We Must Pray For and Stand With Israel. And you can get a digital copy of that sent directly to you when you give a gift of any size to FRC. We'll give you that valuable resource. Again, for more, you can text the word Israel to 67742. All right. According to a report that was released yesterday, this came from the House Judiciary Committee, the Biden administration has caught and released into the United States, into the interior, at least 99 illegal migrants who were on the terror watch list. Unbelievable. This report also revealed that the Border Patrol has encountered tens of thousands of migrants from countries that could present national security risk. Countries like Afghanistan, China, Iran, Syria. And by the way, these numbers don't even include the more than 2 million individuals that got away who are now somewhere in the United States. I was actually on a CODEL on the border, and the day before I was there, four of these individuals from these countries that are highly suspicious, four individuals were caught right there under our nose. Well, joining me now to discuss all of this is Tom McClintock, a great member of Congress. He's a chairman, among other things, of the Subcommittee on Immigration Integrity, Security, and Enforcement. Congressman McClintock, welcome to Washington Watch. Great to have you.
Well, it's great to see you, Jody.
Well, it's great to see you again. Miss you, but thank you for coming on the program here with us. All right, tell us about this report. You're right in the thick of it there on the Judiciary Committee. What have we learned so far?
Well, it simply fleshes out what the FBI director has been warning us for several years now. This constitutes, in his words, a massive security threat to the United States. You mentioned we've seen 375 potential terrorists, suspected terrorists, apprehended at the border, but 99 have been actually released into our country anyway. That 375 is a 3,000% increase over the Trump years. And remember, just 19 terrorists killed 3,000 Americans on 9/11. But you put your finger on exactly what's my greatest fear and is emphasized in the report. 2 million gotaways that we know absolutely nothing about that entered this country while the Border Patrol was completely overwhelmed processing illegals into the country at the orders of the Biden-Harris administration. Now, remember a few years ago when Biden-Harris abandoned Bagram, they released 5,000 of the most dangerous terrorists on the planet in one day. Now, one of those terrorists showed up at Kabul airport and detonated the bomb that killed 13 U.S. service members 10 days after they were released. Here's the problem. We don't know where the other 5,000 are, but it's a good bet that more than a few of them are among the 2 million gotaways who've entered this country under this administration.
Wow. I've got a quote here from the report. It actually says that although American communities already feel the disastrous effects of the Biden-Harris administration's immigration policies, the worst could still be yet to come. How concerned, Congressman McClintock, how concerned should we be about all this?
I don't think it's any longer a question of whether we're going to see a major terrorist attack from elements that have come in through the southern border. The only question is when. I mean, think about this. Under this administration, all you've got to do is flag down a Border Patrol officer. You're virtually guaranteed of admittance into our country. You have free ride anywhere you want to go, free snacks, free clothes, free medical care, free meals, free legal assistance, free cell phones, free housing. Within 6 months, you get work authorization. And when your case comes up years from now and you're ordered deported, the administration won't enforce that order. So under those circumstances, why would anybody want to evade the Border Patrol? Well, 2 million have gone out of their way to enter this country without signing up with the Border Patrol. And the only reason I can think of is that they're hiding a criminal record or they intend to commit crimes in this country. And that's what keeps me awake at night. We don't know, but it's coming.
Well, it keeps a lot of us awake. Last question for you, Congressman Tom McClintock. How should not only this current administration be handling this for the safety of the American people, but we're about to see a future administration. So how should any administration in the White House be dealing with this?
Well, that's the good news. We know how to secure the border because we did it under the Trump administration. Under the same laws we have today, Donald Trump secured that border. On Inauguration Day, our border was secure. Phony asylum claims had been cut to a trickle. The border wall was nearing completion, and we were actually enforcing court-ordered deportations. The Border Patrol was able to focus its attention on stopping potential terrorists very effectively. All of those policies were rescinded by Joe Biden and Kamala Harris on the very first day they took power. And we've seen now a population literally the size of the state of Arizona admitted into this country in the last 3 years as a result of their policies. And with them, the terrorist threat is magnified greatly. I'm really concerned about two things. Either we're going to see a coordinated terrorist attack in the near future, or we're going to see the kind of cartel violence that's now become commonplace in Mexico and is now moving into our cities and towns. All of this was preventable. All of this can be prevented again, but it's going to require a very big change in public policy, a change back to the policies of the Trump administration when our country was safe and our borders were secure. You know, history is screaming this warning at us. Countries that either cannot or will not secure their borders simply aren't around very long.
Can't thank you enough, Congressman Tom McClintock. Thank you so much for coming on Washington Watch and helping to break all this down for us. Godspeed to you, my friend. All right, continuing this conversation on the national security implications of the Biden-Harris border crisis, I want to go further into it from a little bit different perspective. Joining me now is Jessica Vaughn, the Director of Policy Studies at the Center for Immigration Studies. Jessica, thank you so much for joining us today on Washington Watch. Good to have you.
Glad to be with you.
Okay, so many experts like you and your colleagues at the Center for Immigration Studies, you've been sounding the alarm on this whole terror threat that exists because of our open southern border. Your reaction now that this report has finally come out and it indeed supports what you've been saying for a long time.
Yes, we should all be grateful to the House Judiciary Committee for putting the work into getting these numbers from the Department of Homeland Security and showing them to the public, because under the Biden-Harris administration, DHS Secretary Alejandro Mayorkas keeps telling us that we don't have an open border, that everyone is vetted, nothing to see here. When this report makes very clear that there is a lot that we should be very concerned about, and not just the ones that they have actually discovered that have been released, people who've showed up illegally and been released into the country, but we need to worry about the ones we don't know about who are in this massive flow of more than 7 million people who've been allowed to enter and stay here. And we are living in perilous times, and yet we have a nearly open border. That's a lot to be concerned about, and it's too much of a burden to put on our counterterrorism organizations and on our state and local law enforcement agencies.
Absolutely. And like Congressman Tom McClintock said just moments ago, this is what keeps him awake at night, is who is in our country and what those intentions may be. If you can, you mentioned some of the you start into this, but break down for us some of the policies that have led to the findings of this report. What has produced what this report has found?
Well, the single biggest problem is the catch and release policies that have been implemented at the border. That these are policies that were deliberately put in place by Joe Biden and Kamala Harris on day one of their administration in 2021. And what they're basically saying is that if you can make it to the United States and get here illegally, usually by paying a criminal smuggling organization, and some of these criminal smuggling organizations actually specialize in bringing people from countries in the Middle East associated with terror and other parts of the world. So if you can get here, you more than likely will be what they call processed and allowed to remain in this country, maybe because you've said you want to ask for asylum, or maybe, you know, you don't even need to do that. It's from other reports that the House Judiciary Committee has released, we know that not even everybody is bothering to say the word asylum or saying that they fear return. It's a turnstile at the border. And in addition to the ones arriving illegally, the administration has allowed people to apply for essentially a hall pass to come through a legal port of entry, even though they don't have a visa, don't qualify for a visa, and are completely inadmissible to this country. They're waving in more than 35,000 people a month through that program. And some of the terrorists mentioned in this report came in that way. There were three men from Tajikistan who came in on this CBP-1 app that the Biden administration put into place to kind of launder the status of people who want to come in the country and can't qualify for a visa. So these are all a real security threat. We've known since 9/11 that the terrorists consider exploiting a country's immigration system to be the best way to get into the country. And in the 9/11 plot, they had to actually get visas at U.S. consulates. And but now they don't even have to do that. They can just traipse across our border knowing that they're going to be allowed into this country, and that even if they are on the terror watch list, they still may be allowed to enter this country.
Yeah, it's unbelievable. When I get in conversations with people about this, probably the number one question that comes to me is simply the word why. What is this an effort to try to shift away the reality of a disastrous southern border policy and get it into the interior of the country? And by doing so, people forget about the southern border. Or is there more behind this? What is the why behind all of this, in your opinion?
That's a good question. And I think different people who support this have different motivations. But yes, these so-called processing programs are in place so that the administration can avoid the optics of having people swarm at the border and be, you know, in shelters that are overflowing. They want to get them through as quickly as possible, one way or the other, and allow them to travel to their final destination. But in the words of Secretary Mayorkas, this is about what he considers to be equity in immigration, a concept that Kamala Harris very much promotes in a lot of her speeches and so on. It's they think that our immigration system should be opened up to the world for the purposes of what they call equity, so everyone in the world can have the chance to come live here, ignoring the obvious national security threats that are in the world and will take advantage of these policies.
Well, I wanted to read a quote for you from White House Press Secretary Karine Jean-Pierre, and I'm not going to go into all of it. It's rather lengthy, but the bottom line is, I'll just kind of paraphrase it. She says that the president's priority is to make sure that they do everything they can to protect our national security. And in relation to all of what we are discussing right now, where is national security?
Well, it's only been given lip service. They seem to believe that somehow we can track down and find all of the people who might be of attacking someone. I mean, we know that that's impossible. Just today, a man from Pakistan was indicted in New York for trying to set up a plot to kill a high-ranking U.S. government official by hiring hitmen. And he just flew into Houston and then made his way to New York to carry out this plot. There are, you know, hundreds of others of concern that we know about who've been encountered at the border. But we don't have a machine. Even if we tried to actually vet everyone who came across the southern border, it wouldn't be possible to do it. That's why the best national security policy is to routinely and consistently enforce our immigration laws across the board so that a terrorist organization cannot easily exploit
Absolutely.
This vulnerability to come here. That was a big lesson from 9/11 and from other terrorist attacks like the 1993 attacks. We know that if
Jessica
we enforce
Vaughn,
our immigration
laws,
that'll
right
work.
There. Got to leave it there. Jessica Vaughn from the Center for Immigration Studies, thank you so much for joining us. And that is the issue. People need to make sure their representatives secure our border. That's it for today on Washington Watch. We'll see you tomorrow. Have a great evening.
Washington Watch with Tony Perkins is brought to you by Family Research Council and is entirely listener-supported. Portions of the show discussing candidates are brought to you by Family Research Council Action. For more information on anything you heard today, or to find out how you can partner with us in our ongoing efforts to promote faith, family, and freedom, visit TonyPerkins.com.